time obscuring their work.
Lost Talk Radio.
Revolutions, you know, until they get the right person in.
same way everywhere. And it's a frustrating thing to watch, because I know these people are, so many of these people, the 99%ers, are legitimately grieving for this country. I think they're protesting for our future. They're protesting for the present. You know, they've all got their own reasons for being there. But at the same time, the one purpose is to try to bring some kind of justice and equality to this country, and to bring down, if not destroy, but to bring into say equalize or neutralize, if not neutralize, equalize the power of the corporations that we have. And we can do that with our laws. We can do that with this government if we get rid of this government and put in people who are determined to ban lobbyists, okay, ban corporations and corporate interests in our government, and get rid of these bastards who are corrupting our system, these lawmakers, a hypocritical word that is, okay? They are the 1%. They are the 1%. We're the 99%. And we voted these clowns into office, all right? And we're going to vote some other clown, or keep the same clown in office, okay, in 2012, unless some real leader, some real movement or leaders come in and take over and really motivate the people. And I don't know if that is even too late, to do that, but possibly. But let me read this other brilliant quote by Robert F. Kennedy. And I think that, and Robert was a liberal, understood, and he was a dangerous liberal, because he knew where the power was. He knew who to attack. He knew what to attack, and he knew how to attack. But, and that's why they killed him, you know, because he was coming very close to becoming the next president in 1968. So, let me just read this quote. Robert Kennedy stated, "Each time a person stands up for an ideal or acts to improve the lot of others, they send forth a tiny ripple of hope. These ripples build a current which can sweep down the mightiest walls of oppression and resistance." And that is Occupy Wall Street. But the problem is that it's to the point where there are no leaders. They're all individuals being there for the same cause, but there's no real major focal purpose for it other than to occupy Wall Street. And because of that, they're being pushed out. They're being marginalized. They're being battered and bruised and beaten up, right? And we forget. And I've mentioned this so many times over the years, and I've read so much information and done so much research on these things, but on revolutions, okay, and on... There's never been a real revolution without violence. Violence creates the revolution. Oh, yeah, you had the civil rights, and you had the this, and you had the that. But that was all because there was violence, all right, that was created. You got to remember... I love the people say, oh, Gandhi was a nonviolent. Gandhi thousands of Indians died, were killed, were murdered by the British in their resistance to the British government. And it was because of that. It was because of that. And because of the violence that it was creating against the British government, okay, that they had to give it up. They realized they couldn't control 800 million people. They couldn't, all right? And they could never if the 800 million people rose up and threw them out, okay? And that's exactly what they did. And after they started killing them, it got them more and more pissed off, and they became more and more violent, if you will. And Gandhi was ahead of that, though he was saying nonviolence, nonviolence, peace, peace, nonviolence. But at the same time, there were groups behind him that were burning and beating and killing and murdering British civilians and raiding their houses and mansions and all that crap. So behind this face of nonviolence, you had this increasing movement of militancy. The same thing happened in Martin Luther King's movement and the civil rights movement. If you had not had Malcolm X and you had not had the violence that was caused in the 60s by, you know, burning down of Watts and blacks, killing whites, going out there. You had the Black Panthers that were militants. You had, you know, Malcolm X. You had all these different groups that were out there in militants. They were saying, up yours. We're not taking this crap. We're not going to allow you to beat us and kill us. No. Nonviolence is for bullshit. All right? We're not going to take it anymore. And that is what created, what's why Kennedy, okay, who was not going to give them civil rights, even though he had a great idea, even though he was a man of peace in some ways, he realized that those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. And he was talking about the people in Alabama and talking about the people in the South and in the North who refused to give equal rights to the black people and to accept the civil rights community. And the civil rights then became a national and basically international, but definitely a national force, which caused these things to happen. Because if they didn't happen, if we didn't give them equality, if we didn't give them the right to vote, if we didn't give them desegregate, you know, the South, all right, then what would have happened is the black community was riled up enough, they had had enough, that they weren't going to take it anymore, and they were going to burn down and destroy and do whatever it took. They were going to create an incredibly violent revolution that would have been virtually impossible to hold down. Thousands and millions of people could have possibly been killed. It could have been a complete racial war, a civil war, you know, because many white people would have joined the blacks in this. Many people who did join the blacks in this and were killed because of it, right? But this is what Sam Adams once said, that every revolution needs martyrs, right? And he said that after the Boston Massacre, all right, that killed five black men, okay, in Boston. The British had killed them. And the fledgling revolution that began with Adams and the boys grabbed onto that, publicized it, and created a mass appeal, okay, through the newspapers and whatnot at the time, that these men were shot and killed by the British, and this could happen to you, all right? Now, people didn't like the British that much to begin with, but at that point, when they saw five men killed, they realized, whoa, you know. Now, it was interesting that most people don't realize this unless they've studied history, that John Adams, our second president, was the lawyer who defended the British soldiers who actually shot the five people. Now, very fascinating, fascinating history. But and later, John Adams was condemned by Thomas Jefferson as being a monarchist, you know, and wanting to recreate the monarchy in the United States, you know, rather than a constitutional government, right? And that became the downfall there was a sedition law that was passed by John Adams, okay, when he was president, and executed through the Congress and so the Sedition Act, which says you can't say terrible things, okay, about the president or about anybody in government, which was a total violation of freedom of speech in this country. And of course, that didn't go over too big, and it cost John Adams his place in history. It cost him the hatred of the American people. So the election, the winning of the election by Thomas Jefferson, who was the author of the Declaration of Independence. And interestingly enough, it was John Adams who nominated him to write the Declaration of Independence. It's kind of a convoluted historical directive. However, getting back to my initial concept is that there can really never be a peaceful revolution. Because humanity is set against itself. Liberals against conservatives. Christians against non-Christians. The entire war in the Middle East is fought by, on the premise of, the hatred of Muslims, okay, by our Christian-dominated, right-wing-dominated sect in the last 10 years, okay, under George W. Bush, and continued under this monster of a president we have now. We don't even know what the hell he is. This Manchurian candidate. So it's like we have to understand, folks, what we are, what's happening, what's going on. And once we do, once we wake up to this, we realize that, whoa, we're not being represented by anybody. Those who are being represented by our government, and forget our government, by the government, are those who are paying the people in the government, which are the corporations, which are the 1% who are benefiting the most out of this country, okay? Raping the wealth and the resources of this country for their own benefit and giving nothing back. But some measly middle class salaries that they can stop any minute, or stop credit to small businesses and destroy the small businesses all over the place that are competing against the corporations, okay, for the same customers. It's like, pay a politician. I read something recently that disturbed me to no end, and I read it on the air, one of our shows, I believe a couple months ago, that every committee appointment in Congress and in the Senate is paid for by the congressman or senator that gets that appointment. They pay so much out of their own pockets to be on those committees. That's right. Nancy Pelosi paid $5 million to be Speaker of the House. John Boehner, paid the same amount, but they paid it to their own party. They paid that money to the Republican Party. And their responsibility as Speaker of the House was to raise an additional $25 million for that party. Okay. Chairman of committees have paid to be on those committees upwards of $500,000 to be chairman of those committees out of their own wealth, out of their own pockets. Right? This is something that we weren't aware of, but this is the fact. This is the fact. I believe it was one of the resigned senators. I believe it was Lugar. Lugar. Somebody. I forget who it was now. It was a number of years ago that he stated this. That to be in office, you had to raise $2,000 a day. $2,000 every day. Had to be raised by each elected politician in government in Washington, Congress. Just in order to be re-elected. Because if his opponent, God forbid, should make $4,000 a day, donations, or $5,000 or $50,000 a day in donations, they'll have far more money and they'll win your seat. So that's just the way it is. But we foolish Americans have no idea. So little information comes to us from our corporate controlled media, that we're led to believe everything is democracy, everything is fair and equitable in this country, that our justice system is fair and equitable, that our tax system is fair and equitable, that our school systems are educating us to in ways that exceed that will allow us to excel as a nation, that our colleges are the best in the world. That's crap. Our colleges are mediocre at best. Our students in the public school system are not even on. I mean, 12 industrialized nations around the world have a better school, have better education in their school systems than we do. We have a In some of our cities, we have upwards of a 70% dropout rate out of high school. Our streets are gang-dominated. Here in Connecticut, in New Haven, Connecticut, the home of Yale University, is the fourth highest murder rate in the country. Fourth highest, and it's only, it doesn't even have, it doesn't, it maybe has 300,000 or 400,000residents in that city, right? But it's a small city, not like New York or Los Angeles, you know, or Miami, right? We're fourth every single day in New Haven. Home of Yale, there are one or two murders. Yesterday, there was four murders in New Haven alone. Yesterday. So, and yet, what do? They re-elect the idiot who's mayor, DiStefano, okay? They reelected him this month. You know, I mean, geez, you would think that you would want a mayor, okay, who would clean house, all right? Well, no, not DeStefano. He's happy. You know, he's their murder rate is as high as any state in the country, or any city in the country, higher than any city, fourth highest in the country. We have the poorest cities in the country, in the wealthiest state of the United States. We have the poorest. We have three, actually, of the poorest cities in the country. Hartford is the poorest. The capital of Connecticut, capital city of Connecticut, has been rated the poorest city in the country. Highest poverty in the country. Waterbury is the second. New Haven is the third highest poverty rate in the country. Now, there was only one other that came close to us, and that was Brownsville, Texas. You know, for poverty. You would think, oh, Mississippi or whatever. No. The Connecticut, which has supposedly the highest per capita rate in the country per citizen, it has the poorest cities in the country. Crazy, no? Crazy. But this is it. This is where we see the greatest inequality, okay, is in the Connecticut system here. Because the Connecticut people aren't being served at all by their representatives. The top 1% of wage earners in this state, there are over 3 million people in the state of Connecticut, and dwindling quickly because people can't afford to live in this state and they're moving out. We have the highest electrical rate, the highest gasoline rate. We have the highest housing costs, okay, of any other state in the country, right? And our wages are, in many, many, many cases, average or below average. Other states are making more money. Other workers in other states are making as much or more money than workers, the average worker in Connecticut, paying less taxes, less state taxes, less property taxes, less car taxes, you know. They've got a better infrastructure, better roads, better services. Connecticut has some of the worst. And the reason for that is because 1%, again, of Connecticut residents make 90% of the money. All right? And the rest of us are all scrabbling around, you know, trying to pick up the crumbs. You got the Gold Coast down there. You've got the Greenwich, where you've got housing. Up here where I live, believe me, I don't live wealthy. I'm one of the 99.9% of the people here. Right? But you have multi-millionaires and some billionaires who live where I live, up here in this northwest corner of the... But you would, by driving through it, you'd never think that they did. But they do. There's some major, big estates in this area. They're weekend estates. Right? Most of them are from New York. A vast majority of our residents are part-time residents. In this area, they come up through the summer and fall, and they leave. You know, and they live in New York for the rest of the year, or they live in wherever their other many houses are. But what I'm driving at is that nowhere in the country is the inequality, economic inequality, more real I see it. I've lived here for I've lived here for 4 years. Or 38 years or something like that. And I've had mortgages, companies, I've built homes, I've done, have sold real estate, taught school, been, worked in factories when I was when I first got here. Got my college degree here, you know, State University, 4-year degree. Did everything here, but at that time, at the in those days, Connecticut had far more opportunity. I'm talking the 70s, 80s, and right up until about the early 90s, mid-90s. And then everything changed. Everything changed. When Clinton got into office, well, I shouldn't say that, even when Reagan, once the Reaganomics came into effect, we were in a major recession here, but our housing boom was created in Connecticut in 81, 82, 83, and when I was in real estate, and right up through 2000. And but the booms and busts, but it was under both administrations that you saw the demise of the middle classes, which was never greater than you saw here in Connecticut. You saw this tremendous rise during the 70s and 80s, okay, of hope and prosperity, and businesses were moving and people were making money, right? A lot of money. And a lot of companies were here. All the insurance companies were here. And plenty of people had work and were building homes. And just, it was just a great place to be back then. But then after the Reagan years and Bush years, things started to really take a different direction. Until we got Clinton. And once Clinton came into office and created NAFTA and pushed through all these different draconian measures that virtually wiped out the middle class. By the end of his reign in 2000, we were headed in a massive recession, even though it says, oh, we had a budget, blah, blah, blah. Well, what happened was that period is only camouflaged. What he did was he was corporations outsourced millions of jobs. Industry was falling down everywhere, except in the California, in the Silicon Valley, right? And in the bubble that was created during that period through the investment into the internet and to internet companies and so on and so forth. Then you saw the rise of Apple and the rise of window Gates and all these billionaires, these dot-com billionaires. Until today, you have more billionaires that are all related on the internet billionaires. Whereas the industrial base of this country and the infrastructure of this country has diminished to absurd levels, okay? Never before known since the Great Depression. You know, our bridges, our roads, our industries are all being abandoned and all being overused. The businesses aren't buying new capital. Instead, what they're doing is they're sending it overseas and building factories over there. In China, okay, in Honduras, okay, in Indonesia, where they can pay workers 50 cents an hour. It's instead of paying a standard wage here or a union wage in this country, right? So, and they don't have to pay benefits. They don't have to pay anything, right? They have millions of workers out there that work for nothing just to stay alive. Back in the 70s and the 80s, Americans were living well. Americans were living too well. And so, the things went, you know, the banks stopped lending. Everybody stopped and brought this country right onto its knees. And by the 1990s, by the early 80s, rather, we were in a major recession and great inflation. We went through a real estate bubble in the 80s and a working bubble, and we hadn't wiped out our industry yet. People were still working, but by the 90s, by the time NAFTA was pushed through, 93, I guess, a year or so after Clinton got into office, it started to wipe out our entire industries, industry upon industry. We saw it here in Connecticut. All of the manufacturing jobs in Connecticut were suddenly getting wiped out, okay? Hundreds of thousands of people losing their jobs. Even Electric Boat, which was had at one time 30,000 people working for it. United Technologies were building aircrafts and military supplies and so on. Boeing Air Force Base, Sikorsky Aircraft, all this kind of stuff. This was all here in Connecticut. Still it is. But so much of that industry that was keeping Connecticut strong, as well as keeping America strong, is no longer exists. It's gone. It's going. It's moved out most of its people. At one time, this was considered the insurance company, the insurance capital of the world, was Hartford, Connecticut. That city looked great then. Okay, there were high rises and people were busy and that. You could walk down the street safely. You had the Civic Center and you had a Whalers team, you know, hockey, professional hockey team, and semi-professional football team, baseball teams. You had a thriving downtown. You had major department stores and stores downtown, not these sprawling malls that started to appear later, okay? These malls began to appear in the late 80s and early 90s. They started to build these malls, okay? And these malls started to expand and expand outside of the city. And all of these stores, one after another, because people weren't going to the cities anymore, they became blighted. The stores moved out to the malls, all right, and left these vacant buildings, left these vacant streets. And the insurance companies, the huge insurance companies, Travelers, Aetna, Hartford Insurance Group, all of them, that employed hundreds of thousands of people, Connecticut people, and paid them good wages. Now, in as of the 90s, outsourced after NAFTA, outsourced their entire, most of their work was outsourced to India and to China and to Ireland and to everywhere else that had cheaper labor, right? Gave them incredible tax credits to build their facilities over there, right? And then, once the development of the internet came along, between NAFTA and the internet, it completely wiped out the United States workers. Because now under the internet, you could do anything that took people to handle physical paperwork and so on and so forth to handle. Okay, suddenly those things could all be done on computer, and they could be done by anybody around the world. They didn't have to be here in the United States. It could be done in India. It could be done in Asia. It could be done in South America. It could be done anywhere by trained, you know, technicians. So all of this became the demise of our demise of the U.S. economy. Alan Greenspan, in the early 2000s, I remember it well, stated that in order for a new world government to exist, America had to be destroyed. The American middle class had to be brought down to the levels of other countries. All right? So then we developed, under Clinton and under George Bush and the Republican domination and so on and so forth, we developed the ultimate destruction of the United States. We spent all of its treasure on these bogus wars. We created a 9-1-1 false flag terror operation to blame so that we could go to war in the Middle East and create and dominate the Middle East with our military, okay, and control all these countries and the oil, right, for the oil corporations. It wasn't for the American people, it was for the oil. But the vengeance, the destruction of the Twin Towers and the sudden Islamophobia that was created through this led to the complete annihilation of our Constitution and the annihilation of our freedoms of speech, our freedoms of elections, our freedoms. If you remember, the last, in 2000, that election was chosen by the Supreme Court, right? Because they would not allow Al Gore's recount. The Supreme Court chose our president. And from then, in 2004, the elections were rigged again, and violently rigged, horribly rigged. Right? I have full evidence of that. I spent many, many programs with many, many experts on this. Okay, in the year 2003, 2004, 2005, describing, my book states states I have a complete chapter on it. It's called Damn Democrats, right? How the Democrats allowed this to happen and how the Republicans just walked over the entire system with this electronic voting machines and voter fraud, which was rampant. In 2004 election, over 3 million votes were not counted. 3 million votes. Guess who? Or Kerry. Now, whether you can decide whether Kerry would have been a better choice than Bush, chances are they're both pieces of crap. Okay? But nevertheless, I don't think with Kerry we would have gone into Iraq for some reason. Kerry wasn't really a neocon. But we probably would have had something worse. So I don't know, something by something worse. But nevertheless, you're dealing with basically a skull and bonesman, controlled by the skull and bones. He and George Bush were third cousins, okay? I mean, it was the whole elite, right? And but by the dishonesty of the Republicans and by the cowardice of the Democrats, we got George Bush in another 8 years, or 4 years. Okay. And because of that, we got into Afghanistan, we got into Iraq, and we gave away all of our wealth, okay, to the top 1%. Within that, those 10 years that George Bush was in power, 8 years and 10 years actually with Obama, there was a rise of income of 275% rise in the income of the 1% over that of the, and there was actually a decrease, okay, of 10 or 20%, 10-15%, something like that, of the middle class income went down, okay, while the 1% of that went up by 275%. So the 1% have never been wealthier than they are right now in this country, in the world. Never had this kind of billionaires before. there have never been so many people without jobs. So many people without jobs. Remember this, too. Everybody quotes these figures. Oh, it's 25% unemployment. Well, that's true. The Great Depression, 25% unemployment. Yeah, but it was half the population. Well, maybe 150 million people in the United States. Maybe less. Since 1933, at the height of the Depression, till 2011, there are now 330 million Americans? Over 20 million of them are illegal aliens, aren't even citizens, aren't even Americans. They just poured in over the borders. Right? Now, if you took a 25% of 150 million, right? Now that's men, women, and children, but let's say men. Let's say, you know, because women didn't really work in the 30s, that they weren't really a major part of the workforce. But let's bring that figure of maybe 150 million down to a working figure of maybe 50 or 60 million men in this country who actually worked, the rest with their wives and children. And then we look today at 330 million. And then in 33, you take maybe 60,000 men, maybe even less, maybe 50 million men, okay, who are at 25% unemployment of 50 million is far less people than 25% of 330 million. No? Or, you know, whatever. We're looking today at, I think they said, 90 million people are working in this country. The rest are spouses, children, and the elderly, retired, and so on and so forth. But the majority of working stiffs in this country is roughly around 90 million people, one-third, or less than one-third, just as it was back in the 30s, okay? Even though in the 30s we had more children. But if you take 25% of, say, even a negative, 100 million people, as opposed to 25% of 50 million people, right? That's a hell of a lot bigger number. 25% of 100 million people is 25 million people without jobs. 25% of 50 million people was, I'm sorry, what's quarter of 50 million was, 15 million? Or 20 million? 20 million, right? So, 15 million. Quarter would be about 15 million. Whereas today, you have over 30 million. So you have double. You have double the population, therefore you have double the number of people unemployed. Now, you saw the problems that arose during the 30s, during the Great Depression. But now you look and you see the problems that arise today, in this depression. And they're virtually the same problems caused by the same people, caused by the bankers, caused by the politicians, caused by Washington, caused by the greed, you know, and caused by Wall Street. So, caused by the First World War, caused by the Second World War, caused by the Marshall Plan. Look at the Marshall Plan, where we spent all of our money building up Europe. Europe to this day has a far greater, Europe and Japan have far greater technologically advanced societies than we do. We don't realize this listening here on the internet, right, that two-thirds of this country does not have internet service, does not have a broadband service. Our infrastructure nationwide is kaput. many areas don't even have cell phone services, right? So, you know, when we're industrialized and urbanized societies, or societies that have, you know, that are not rural, right? Then, you know, those people don't have the access that we have. A lot of them don't have cable, for crying out loud. They have to work on antennas, okay, and analog service. They don't have digital services, right? So, I mean, so how do you communicate with these? How do you hear about these people? You don't. The only way that you hear about the rest of this country is either unless they are making themselves visible on the internet or in the news somehow, or writing books, or their faces are plastered on the mainstream media, or nothing. You don't hear about them. You don't see them. You don't know in Connecticut what's going on in Missouri. You don't know in Connecticut what's going on in California unless you hear about it on the internet, brought about by some reporter, some media, okay, who is controlling that medium, okay, by what they're saying. Oh, it's no problem out there, or oh, it's terrible, or yes, it's good, or no, it's good, or blah, 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 right? Seems like the only time we hear anything is when there are devastating floods or hurricanes or tornadoes or some sort, or snowstorms or whatever. Certain parts of the country get such and such, or earthquakes here and there. But you hear about it when it happens, and then you hear about nothing after that. What's happening there? What happened in Joslyn after the entire town was devastated by tornadoes? What's happening in the Gulf Coast after the BP oil spill? You don't know that thousands and thousands and thousands of uncounted people are still dying from the effects of Corex and petroleum on their beaches and in their food, right? And you only hear, oh, come on down, enjoy New Orleans, you know, doing the Mardi Gras, blah, 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 right? It's a crock of crap, right? You don't hear it. You're isolated. Up here in New England, this is interesting. Like 2 weeks ago, the entire state of Connecticut was in the dark. We had no power. As of today, the president of CLMP, who is a major power company in Connecticut, resigned in disgrace. You know, he was told to resign because 1 million customers were out of power for nearly a week. Okay, in the end of October, beginning of November, when mornings were like 30 and 28 and 30 degree weather. I mean, your home is without heat. I mean, you wake up at 40 degrees, 45 degrees, unless you had a wood stove. You couldn't cook. Your refrigerator was on the blink. You had no internet. You had no anything. You had nothing. Unless you have battery-operated clocks or battery-operated radio, right? And in many areas, you couldn't even get local news unless you had a local station, okay, that was delivering local news, right? So, you know, as to what's happening, how many areas are out, when do you expect to get power back? The only way you could get that information is if you had a battery-operated radio, okay, or you got in your car radio. So, and you couldn't even get gas because all the pumps were out, okay, across the state. I mean, I don't know where to get, how are you going to get gas if you get in your car to go to work? You couldn't, and it didn't go to work. I mean, all the schools were closed for a week. All the hospitals were running on generators. Grocery stores were running on generators. Hospitals were running on generators, backup generators, trying to operate with gasoline generators or propane generators or something, and with very, very limited communications. So it was a horrible period, But what I'm trying to say to you is that we allowed this to happen. Our complacency as human beings here in Connecticut and around the country, right, has allowed this malaise to set in and this 1% to take over, and these corporations we depended on to give us jobs and to, you know, give us food and give us, well, what have they done? They gave us jobs. They gave us contaminated food. They gave us crap-ass jobs, and then they took those jobs away even, okay? We became dependent upon them, and we gave them incredible tax breaks, okay, in these communities, and they came in, and they built these huge buildings, and then all of a sudden, they leave them. They empty out the buildings, empty out the factories, send the jobs overseas, leave every thousands and hundreds of thousands of people without jobs, all right? Millions of people without jobs in this country, right? With huge vacant buildings that no taxes are being paid on because, they just abandoned the buildings. General Electric is one of the biggest culprits in the country, okay, for brownfields and polluted factories and so on and so forth left in this country. And guess what? Guess who the czar of business is right now under the Obama administration? None other than the chairman of the board of General Electric, you know. So who's winning here? This is a joke. And I'm saying, folks, nonviolent protest will not work. It's showing that it's not. People are getting beat up everywhere, thrown back. They're kicking people out of the parks, kicking them off the streets, beating them over the head, pepper spraying them. They don't give a crap about you. All right? And the New York Police Department are a bunch of fascist bastards, just like the rest of the New York, but just the Oakland Police, all of these damn military groups, okay, which is what they are, you know, fascist bastard stormtroopers, okay, black and brown shirts, okay, blue shirts, all right? So I have about another minute or two on here. I want to kind of boot this before I go off the air. I may have to run a little further tonight on it, but I just wanted to say that using the words of the great JFK, okay, those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable, and that's what's going to happen in this country. That's the only thing that this country is going to listen to. The only thing is if you walk into D.C., walk into the White House, take over those bastards, knock them out, throw them out, you know, kick them out, burn them out, tar and feather them like they did during the Great Revolution. That's the only way to get rid of them. Each time a person stands up for an ideal or acts to improve the lots of others, they send forth a tiny ripple of hope. These ripples build a current which can sweep down the mightiest walls of oppression and resistance. That was by Robert Kennedy. And that, folks, is what I'll end tonight's program on. Every bit that you do to help knock this wall down will create a huge seawall, a huge tidal wave, a revolution. With that, God bless you guys. God bless Wall Street, Occupy Wall Street. God bless all the guys that are getting their heads beaten in and so on and so forth. I just hope that the military, you know, the veterans and all these guys and those who are in support of the Occupy Wall Street begin to stand up, take charge, and really, really take back this country. That I'll leave you. Good night, everyone.
Thank you.